Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Guten Tag and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. I'm Alex and I've spent the last week or so in Germany.
Picked up so much of the local culture.
Exactly.
A lot of Heffenweizen.
I don't know what that is.
Beer.
Is it?
Yeah.
That voice belongs to Daniel Cooper.
Hello. still the very British hello.
Hello. Chris Tilly.
It's me. But obviously people will know you in Germany because they would have heard the podcast you guys did from Gamescom.
Yeah, whatever. We didn't have time. We took the gear with us. We had every intention, but time ran away with us.
So sorry, listeners.
We were too busy.
That Alex and Dan let you all down.
Gobbling pork knuckle.
Excellent.
Have you ever tried pork knuckle?
Yeah, not for me.
Really?
Nah, yeah.
Why not?
I didn't like it. I don't like pork scratchings. Don't like pork knuckle.
But what? Do you like roast pork?
It's all right. I'm not even a big crackling fan, so.
What?
I know.
There's not a lot for you to like there.
So that's why you didn't do the podcast, is because you were eating pork knuckle.
Yeah. Well, they're big.
You could have filmed it and put it on the side.
Could have done.
And drinking beer. Yeah. Could have filmed it in 1080p at 60 frames per second.
Dan Kilby, yes, exactly. It's the only way to experience pork knuckle. Dan Kilby did take photos of every single piece of food that he ordered.
Every piece of pork you
sell. Interesting.
But if you do go to Cologne, a top tip, there's two types of pork knuckle.
Okay.
There's the grilled one, which I think you and I had.
Grilled, yes. And then that's where you get your crackling, Chris.
It's all firm and nice and tasty.
Roasted.
Whereas Bear Park, I think, had, I don't know if it's boiled or something or other, but it looked a little bit like an unborn fetus.
Mm.
It wasn't very nice.
It looked like an alien fetus.
Or an old man's testicle.
How did it taste?
I like an old man's testicle.
I don't put that sort of shit in my mouth.
That's what Rich
honest.
Said. He says, that reminds me of an old man's testicle.
That's why
immediately, that's what he said.
See, Rich isn't here to defend himself, but I'm pretty sure he's in the next room listening.
I can see him. He's nodding and agreeing, yes, it did. That's what he's saying to me through the glass. Yes, it did.
Licking his lips.
So do you want to tell me about Gamescom then?
Busy show.
Yep.
It's always been busy, but I don't know what it was this year. Maybe it was the rain, and I know that sounds really pathetic, but normally
it was inside, Alex.
Yes. But there's lots of kind of food trucks and stuff like that outside. And there was one point where I was walking through the corridors, through the hallways, to get from one place to another, and it must have started raining because suddenly all these people converged, and it got to a point where I could not move. I literally couldn't move.
And you just attack people.
You know what I'm like. my patience is not very good. And I had to get back to the IGN room to write something up. And I think I don't know whether I put my head down, but I was just like, get out of here. But so from that perspective, it was pretty horrendous.
It was horrendous. It rained.
It was too busy. It was too busy.
It's always too busy.
The games on show, excuse me, were fantastic.
And IGN went massive this year. We had a live stream for the first time ever at Gamescom.
Yeah.
We had more people out there than ever before.
3 days of live streaming.
We owned it.
The very best
We
games.
Wrestled it to the ground.
Did you meet
sat on its face.
Did you meet any listeners while you were there?
You were stopped.
I was stopped.
That was just going through customs, though.
I was stopped by a nice chap who works for Ubisoft in their central marketing team. who listens to the podcast and reads IGN. I don't know, a lot of my appointments were kind of in the business area, which is separate to the show floor, where the public are and people who might enjoy the podcast. So I didn't really spot anyone. But I know a few people out there. I know Rich Hodgson was out there,
yeah,
and a few other people who listened to the podcast.
There were so many people there. To kind of bump into someone would be incredible.
The original plan was to have a meet and greet on Thursday night, but we just, honestly, to get coverage up on the site, we were just working until about 9, 10 o'clock every night.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't possible. Shame.
Spent
a lot of time with the US guys there. That was very pleasant. Somebody on the live stream out Damon by saying "Keep it locked on IGN" before he had the chance to say it.
He was like a robot facing a logical paradox. He didn't know how to like finish the segment.
That was funny. So what are you going to say?
What was the best game at Gamescom?
The
big questions from Chris Dilly.
The most fun I had actually playing a game was Evolve. So you and I plus Marty and Tristan were the hunters, and then Tal, who's our newly crowned publisher, was the monster. Of course he was.
He was the
three
cracking
games. We beat him 2-1.
Awesome
teamwork,
which means we get pay rises.
There wasn't a lot of teamwork going on. It was basically people running around like headless chickens and then coming together at the last minute.
We were all right. We thought we were going to get destroyed but we still won.
And how did Prince Kamali do? He was newsing it up, wasn't he?
Yeah, he did. He did well. So it was probably the busiest show. It was busier than E3.
Yeah.
But that's not because... Well, it's mainly because we didn't have as many people, quite frankly. But it was good fun. And I think you'll only see Gamescom becoming a bigger part of the gaming calendar.
Do you actually think it's now... months. Because both first parties used it as a space and new a platform to make announcements, strategic decisions, or reveal new games.
Andy, eh?
Is it going to be... is it? Can you say it's Europe's E3 yet?
Well, it's bigger than E3.
Yeah.
But not in terms
of announcements and
stuff. No, I know, but it's too late on during the year to become that platform, I think.
Yeah.
Because E3, a lot of that stuff is like, right, we're announcing and then we're going to come either end of this year, if you're lucky, or maybe at the beginning.
I think it's becoming a good space like to do a kind of a second big reveal for games that are coming out in the first part of the following year.
Yeah.
And also kind of a reasonable platform for stuff that wouldn't wow people if you did it in like the Staples Center or somewhere in E3.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was still like for kind of the more independent games and the quirkier games like Sony's first party stuff.
Yeah.
I think it feels more at home at Gamescom.
Yeah. And you know, I think also it's a weird thing because there's not a lot of gap between E3 and Gamescom. There's only 2 months and you've got Comic-Con in the middle. So as a developer, it's like, you know, you can't show something new at each different thing. So I guess Comic-Con is more consumer-focused, I guess. Chris, but yeah.
Chris, I came back with a game for you. This is the game for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Until Dawn, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to hear the elevator pitch?
Mm-hmm.
So you play it over the course of one night.
Mm-hmm.
Eight characters. One of them is Hayden Panettiere.
Okay, the cheerleader.
The cheerleader, try to save her. So it's eight friends in a cabin in the woods. I think it's a ski resort. And depending on the decisions you make, the characters can all survive the night or all of them can die.
Or any combination.
There's a serial killer out to get them.
Okay, that's good to know.
And I should have probably foregrounded that, if anything.
They're just there on holiday. That's it.
It's just basically an argument simulator. I thought you'd like it. Every time you play the game, it's almost like a party game. So every time you play it, it'll be different. Is that intriguing?
It sounds like fun.
Yeah.
It was coming out on PlayStation 3 on the Move controller, so you don't use a normal traditional controller, but they've kind of ditched all that. It's coming out on PS4. It looks great. It looked great on PS3 in terms of what it was trying to achieve. And, you know, I think the fact that it's that open, if it was a single narrative and, you know, the same people die at the same point, then it'd get boring. But the fact
it changes open every time. So it's kind of like Heavy Rain, like the narrative fractures in lots of different ways. And I think the whole idea is they want it to be a bit of a party game that you play it overnight until dawn.
Yeah.
And you pass the controller every time your character dies. And if, you know, Bagsy stays on.
Yeah.
When can I play it?
No release date yet.
No release date.
But I think it's got... There's a lot of kind of horror writers that have worked on it.
Well, horror is a big theme of Gamescom, obviously, with PT, aka Silent Hill demo, being shown.
Bloodborne.
I haven't had the chance to show you that yet, but that's... No. It's just... It's kind of... They pitch as an interactive demo or tease or whatever. But that's really freaky. So we'll get you playing that with some headphones on in the dark.
I don't like getting scared.
Freak you out this week.
You love horror. Scared.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Anyway, should we crack on?
Let's crack on. Let's crack on with the news. Chris, you're up first.
There's a picture of Ant-Man. It started shooting in San Francisco, and they released a picture of Paul Rudd standing in front of the Golden Gate Bridge, not looking like an ant. No ants appear to be in the picture.
Are we sure it's Ant-Man?
He doesn't.
That could be from any film starring Paul Rudd, surely.
It could, except he's normally smiling. He's looking quite mean and moody here.
Right.
So,
and he's got stitches on his eye.
And he's wearing a hoodie, isn't he?
Yeah,
he looks quite like...
He looks like he should be an infamous.
He looks like a thug.
He's had some bother, hasn't he? Yeah. He's had some trouble.
So is he on the run? What can we wildly infer and speculate about this picture?
Well, nothing.
Okay.
Let's state facts.
Apart from it's going to be in San Francisco.
They announced the casting of Mad Men's John Slattery in the movie. He'll be reprising his role of Howard Stark from Iron Man 2.
I was just going to say, he's already appeared in the Marvel series, yeah.
So, how's this going to work?
Well, this is going to be flashback sequences, isn't it?
With Michael Douglas.
But will it be Michael Douglas?
Will it be Michael Douglas's dad?
No, it'll be younger. If it's flashbacks, it can't be Michael Douglas. So Michael Douglas is playing him today.
Can they not CGI Michael Douglas to make him look young?
Nobody wants. That's what Catherine Zeta-Jones has been. Catherine's been asking that for years.
There are no computers powerful enough to do that.
He's been doing it to himself, though, hasn't he?
What, processing himself?
He's had work done, so maybe he's had some more work done to make him look.
Do you think maybe they'll cut his face off and put a new one on?
Oh, John Travolta's.
So that's cool. I quite like John Slattery in that role. I like John Slattery, really.
I can only think of Tony Slattery for whatever reason.
Is this
in... Do you watch Mad Men?
Yeah, I watched the first season.
He's the guy with the white hair. Skinny guy who's...
Quite senior?
Yeah.
Does he have a heart attack or something?
Yeah,
I know.
But aren't they doing something quite interesting here, kind of further building out the kind of more 1960s or whenever Marvel universe, which is going to be explored further on film with the Agent Carter series? So could you even have a period Marvel film in a few years time?
Well, I guess Captain America was a period Marvel film.
Yeah, but like going back with like almost like a period Avengers or like the original Ant-Man when he first tried to become a hero.
Like the Golden Age DC
stuff. Yeah, like basically the first wave of heroes before they kind of died out and then came back.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Because they haven't announced who... I don't think they've announced who's playing the younger Hank Pym.
No.
Because they could hire an actor there and like tie him down to a TV contract if they wanted.
Yeah.
So that's just the thing.
Going back to that image though, surely you just want to see him as Ant-Man, not just as Paul Rudd. That's not Ant-Man standing in front of the Golden Gate Bridge, that's just Paul Rudd.
I think it was from the first day of shooting. I don't know why they felt they need to rush something out.
Is that him just arriving?
Exactly. He's not even in makeup yet.
I'm here.
And it's a bit cold, that's why he's got his head up. Because it does get...
It's just one of those pictures that makes me just shrug, really.
Is the film taking place in San Francisco? Like, obviously in part, but do we know if that's the major location?
I don't know.
Nothing.
We don't know.
No, we don't know. Anyway.
Moving on.
I've got some news about Microsoft's deal with Square Enix. Now, they announced at Gamescom that Rise of the Tomb Raider would be Xbox exclusive. And obviously there was much discussion after that what does actually exclusive mean? And Phil Spencer, who's the head of Xbox, kind of said, well, it's not his game, but basically inferring that at some point you could see it on other platforms. But the reason he gave for them wanting it and probably giving Square a...
Don't swear.
Do you know, it's really hard not to swear. A load of cash is because they've got... shooters covered with Halo, they've got Gears of War, they've got Forza, they've got all the genres covered, but what they don't have is a good answer to Uncharted. So that's why they threw a big stack of cash at Square.
So Lara is the Nathan Drake killer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was all very crafty the way it was phrased.
That's exactly the same as every announcement.
But in such a way that it was kind of obvious in them not saying that it was full exclusive, that it was timed exclusive, so just be up front.
Yeah.
But are they banking on people not hearing the later press release or getting too lots of coverage out of it? Is it something as stupid and as petty as that?
I think, you know, you've got people who obviously will follow that story all the way through. But you've also, you know, in terms of the broader media, the headline is, it's exclusive to Xbox One. So somebody will read that in the Metro, for example, and that will be their opinion.
But also then, you know, once you scale up to that level, broader media, do people even give a toss?
Lara Croft is definitely a name that fits the broader sphere. I do question whether it's
powerful enough to buy a Xbox One.
No, I agree. If I only had a PlayStation 4, I wouldn't buy an Xbox One just for that. But
yeah,
there are probably some people that would. But anyway, he did say, I thought it was a bit of a weird quote. He said, certain people won't believe this, but the acquisition doesn't come from an evil space.
Wow. Doesn't come from an evil space.
That's what he said.
When someone says
Microsoft.
Something...
Microsoft.
Yes.
When someone says something like that, it immediately makes me think that it's coming from an evil space.
Exactly.
Because I need to deny that. It.
Yeah.
So I
thought that at Gamescom when the big tentacle came out of the vortex to make the announcement.
Yes.
It's like my friend with a dog. When the dog goes up to other people, she said, oh, don't worry, he won't bite. People immediately think, oh, he's going to bite.
Exactly.
I say to her, don't worry, it's friendly.
Yeah.
And then that's fine. It calms people.
Yeah, but then does it? Because then I would think, well,
it's better than biting. Because as soon as someone says biting, I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to get bitten here.
Yeah.
It's coming from a bad place, that is.
Evil place. Evil.
Don't worry, he's got four legs. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay,
surely,
yeah, that's
like, right. One of the golden rules of PR is not to use words like evil.
Yes.
Just stay away, yeah. Stay away from words, yeah, that are, like, biblical.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's not coming from an evil space. Maybe you meant in brackets Sony. I don't know.
It's coming from my special place.
Yeah, so, poor turn of phrase.
Right, okay. Does anyone want to hear an outrageous rumor about the plot of Batman versus Superman again?
Why not?
Well, I've got one for you. So, okay, if you've not seen Man of Steel, you probably have already, but this is spoiler territory for that film if you've not seen it, so be warned. Geek Tyrant has the scoop on this, and apparently...
Who's Geek Tyrant?
You don't know Geek Tyrant?
He sounds angry.
I do his bidding.
He comes from a place of evil.
On eBay.
So they're trying to, like... So this rumour kind of explains how Lex Luthor is going to fit into the overall scheme of the movie. One of the scenes shot featured Batman breaking into LexCorp to steal kryptonite, reports the site. And apparently LexCorp has somehow gotten a hold of General Zod's body. So apparently Lex is using Zod's corpse and the World Engine, which is the big machinery that Zod uses to, like, destroy planet Earth in Man of Steel, to synthesise kryptonite.
Right.
So there you go.
Okay.
Do you think that sounds remotely credible?
There's going to be
so much going on
in this film that could probably be the entire plot line in any other film apart from this, in which it will fill about 3 minutes of screen time.
Am I imagining the fact that they said that kryptonite doesn't exist in this universe, or at least it wasn't going to anytime soon?
Well, it didn't in Man of Steel,
yeah,
did it?
Yeah, it didn't. I thought there was something on record that was saying that it wasn't going to be a plot point because it's kind of been it's a bit hackneyed.
Right.
Maybe that was just in regards to Man of Steel. But
he's run out of ideas one film in.
I kind of hope it's not, because I don't want this whole film to be spoiled for me. I feel like between this and Star Wars, we're trying to find out every single plot detail. I'm a bit...
I don't know anything about Star Wars.
Well, I've not read it. I've not been reading them. Okay. Plus, I'm guessing half of them are not true.
Tosh, yeah.
There seems to be every week another thing breaks as to the beginning, the middle, or the end of that movie.
I guess, like, let's, like, disregard the specifics for a moment. I think what this kind of shows is they're going to have to use some of these additional characters smartly as ways to bring the characters together.
Yeah.
So using, you know... they need to do universe building very quickly,
yeah,
and that's the problem. Marvel has done it over like 9 films or whatever so far, 10 films. They're going to have to do it in the space of one movie,
yeah.
So you're going to have to find a reason for Zod not just being kind of dispatched after one movie and forgotten about, and bringing Batman in a natural way.
But then all these other characters,
yeah,
it's like,
did you see there was a picture of Scoot McNairy? No, Scoot McNairy?
No.
He's the guy in Monsters, friend of Joe Utiki.
Well, he was the lead?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
He's
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
He's been in lots of stuff. He's in Argo. Yeah, lots of movies. On set in green socks. So they're saying he's the Flash. It's not been announced yet, but it looks like he's going to be the Flash.
In green socks?
Yeah, like all green screen stuff.
Oh. I think the Green Lantern.
Yeah, no, they're saying he's the Flash. Has the Green Lantern not...
No, but he definitely wears socks. They're astral projections.
I'm confused.
Yeah, that was a rumour last week anyway.
Okay.
Star
Wars, you know they showed that picture of the Stormtrooper helmet?
Yeah.
Was that real?
I don't think it's been authenticated.
Have you not?
It looks cool, doesn't it?
I've not been looking. Right.
It's very traditional, but yet not modern.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was very cool, that picture.
If it's real, yeah.
But what I like about this rumour is it... Because my worry when they announced Batman versus Superman is they were just going to kind of forget about Man of Steel. It does feel like they're making at least some kind of effort to... refer back and call back to that film rather than just going, right, done that.
We've done well, I think we kind of heard that the destruction of Metropolis is going to
factor into it. But also having Zod still as an influencer thing, that's quite cool. But anyway, still speculation.
Yeah. So, obviously, last week was Gamescom. One of the biggest games that I saw at Gamescom was Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain. In fact, we've got the full 22-minute video of that demo up on site.
Exclusively on IGN.
Exclusively, 1080p, 60 frames a second. Your eyes will not believe what they're seeing. And I came away thinking, man, this game is amazing, but also this game's never going to come out. But
okay, that's interesting.
Well,
why is that?
Because...
the ambition too great?
It's extremely ambitious, because as a single-player experience... you've got this massive open world with so much to do. And Ground Zeroes was a small, compact game. And I know that people complain that you could finish it in 7 minutes or whatever.
That defeats the point.
But this
is
on a much, much grander scale. And then you've got the whole multiplayer component, which we'll speak about in a minute. But, you know, I can't imagine that game is going to come out before Christmas 2015. I just can't see it. But anyway.
So you do think it's going to come out, though?
Well, I do, but not...
I don't want somebody quoting you out of context. Alex Simmons.
I might be dead by the time it comes out.
Bloody hell.
Oh, no.
What the pressing you've not told us.
Jesus.
Yeah. I wanted to do it on this podcast.
Oh, God. I've
got a rash.
But you liked what you saw.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So, you've seen most of it.
Yeah, I got 5 minutes in and then someone took my computer away just now.
That's the kind of neighbourhood.
That's what goes on at IGN.
The neighbourhood that we work in.
At least you've got a computer.
And you've seen it all?
Yes.
Yeah. So the first part of the demo is what they showed last week on Twitch, which is the same demo from E3, but from demonstrating how you can play it in different ways. So they played it at night rather than during the day. But one of the clever things about the game is that the AI learns. So if you go through the game taking people out with headshots, then later on the game, all the enemy troops start wearing helmets to prevent you from doing those one-shot kills in the heads. That's clever. Also, if you shoot them in the chest, wear body armor, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got to continue like mixing up your game and doing all that stuff. They showed off the cardboard box, which I think... I like the idea that the cardboard box is upgradable, which sounds a bit ridiculous if you don't know Metal Gear. But one of the things is you unfold it to be like a full-length picture of a woman in a bikini, and these highly specialised trained troops who are smart enough to put on helmets when you do headshots look at it and go, and then
like
basically giving you enough time to
they
take
run
them
towards
out.
You and you can it's, just like it's a bit them in like, balls. But the thing is like Metal Gear has always tread that very fine line between the absolute ridiculous and eccentric, and also the very serious, because Ground Zeroes is about like rendition and torture and teenage rape and like underage rape and all this great, very serious issues, but also it'll find a place for stuff like that.
Yeah, and at like the opening of the demo, it had Snake riding in a horse. You've got this Jeep patrol coming towards you, so he orders the horse to curl off a fat one, rides off the Jeep skids on the head, giving him enough time to go in, attach a parachute and lift it up into the sky. It's bizarre.
Is that everything you wanted from a game when
that
you were 10?
That sounds awesome.
It is awesome.
I think that's the point. Like, I think Kojima knows that video games are inherently ridiculous in some sense. They can treat serious issues if they want to.
I just think...
Some people find that a very uneasy balance.
The bikini stuff is probably a step too far.
Yeah.
In my eyes. But anyway.
Okay, should we get onto the multiplayer stuff?
Yeah, so you're going through the single player experience. It's very much like Peace Walk in that any kind of resource you find, whether it's a Jeep or whether it's a troop or anything like that, you can attach what is called this Fulton recovery system, which is a parachute that lifts them up into the sky.
It's like a skyhook, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dark Knight.
Takes them back to your base. So if you recruit high-level scientists or this, that, and the other, you can develop different weapons and this, that, and the other. But it turns out that home base that you build is actually part of the multiplayer campaign. So I'll have a multiplayer base that I'm developing, this, that, and the other, and you're doing the same. But it turns out you can infiltrate the other person's base to steal their resources. And that's what they showed. And I think it looks really, really good.
So this isn't live multiplayer. This is almost like asynchronous. The other person doesn't need to be online and you can like interact with their base.
I don't know. So the way the demo ends is that you've got, if I was attacking you, I'd be sneaking along. And then you've been alerted or I've triggered something. So you know that I'm there. And then you start attacking me. But I don't know if that is you happen to be online at the same time, or, you know, whether it will be, there will be a companion app, for example. That would be pretty cool. So, oh, by the way, somebody's triggered something on your base. I hop online, there you are, I'll take you out. I don't know.
Okay, so as a long-term Metal Gear fan, do you welcome the addition of multiplayer, this type of multiplayer?
It all depends on whether that's going to get in the way of the single-player experience. Now, in Peace Walker, it doesn't. It enhances the single-player experience because the actual going through and building up your base and developing new weapons and tech that you can then take out to the single player experience is really, really good, because you'll get to a mission that's, you know, super tough. And, you know, what you really need is a high powered sniper rifle, blah, blah, blah. You haven't got one. You can go back to previous missions, go and search for high level scientists or R&D people that will give you that kit to then go back and do it well. I like that idea. If it gets to a point where my base is constantly being raided and all my stuff that I've worked hard for is nicked, I'd find that really annoying. Mm. You know, if that got in the way of my enjoyment of the single player.
That's what I'm going to do to you then.
Do you know what? It's one of the reasons why I stopped playing Boom Beach, because every time I logged in, it was just like, you absolute turds. Like, all of my gold.
Very similar, though, aren't they, the two experiences?
It's, well, they're both tower defense games. Yeah. The idea is I think this is how I interpreted the video, is that as a defender, you invest in gun turrets, patrols, this, that, and the other. So when you're not online, you've got enough gear there to make sure your stuff isn't being nicked.
Lynched, yeah.
But, you know, who knows? But that's, again, hugely ambitious as a side,
as
an add-on to the main game. So maybe it won't even come out next year. I don't know. Huh. But I'm excited. What about you guys?
So in the next decade, we're going to see this.
Hopefully.
At some point.
Before I die. That would
on
be,
the PS4.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'll be sad.
Or PS5.
In my coffin.
I thought, also, I'm just going to say a very obvious and stupid thing. It looks amazing.
It does look absolutely
beautiful. Yeah. Like, it looks incredible. Like, the animations. Yeah. Everything about Ground Zeroes, I loved.
Yeah.
I didn't mind that it is theoretically 7 minutes long.
Yeah.
I must have played that game for about 8 hours.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I love the freedom that it has. And it feels in keeping with Metal Gear games of old.
Yeah.
But mechanically, it's gone 5-10 years into the future. Like, it's really caught up.
Yeah.
And if you feel like the most badass secret agent. I never really felt like that before with Metal Gear. I felt a bit hampered by the controls.
Even, like, again, in the first part where it's a single player demo, there's a helicopter that's called in to just before you try and make your escape. And I can't remember what happens in the first time at E3. I think he basically jumps on a horse and just legs it. Whereas this time round, he sneaks up to a Jeep, puts some C4 on, and then straps a Fulton recovery in, so the Jeep gets lifted into the air, but it collides with a helicopter, blows it up, and it's just having that freedom of creativity.
Like, emerging gameplay. You can do whatever you want.
Crazy. And that was the good thing about Ground Zeroes.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
it's different every time.
Reading about people and how they've done stuff.
That's why it doesn't matter if it is 7 minutes long. It's because you can play it every time and it'd be different.
Because they were like, there was apparently a power switch hidden, and that was shut down all the kind of lights across the prison camp, and all that kind of stuff was just very cool. Discovery, different ways to play it. So I'm very excited.
When do we get to hear him speak?
What, Solid Snake?
Yeah,
it's in there.
Is it? I didn't get that far.
Yeah, old. What's his face? Keith Sutherland. Yeah.
How did that sound?
Well, we heard it before.
Yeah.
Because he's in Ground Zeroes as well.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't say much in this demo. He basically he points a gun at someone and tells them to get down. I believe.
Are you used to him in that role yet?
I think it still sounds a bit weird, but I'm sure you get used to it. Mm-hmm. I must admit, after Ground Zeroes, I didn't really kind of. It feels like a different enough game compared to the old Metal Gears, and I think that's the jump in, like, you know, fidelity in the way it's presented, because it does look absolutely beautiful. So anyway, our listeners, you should let us know what you think of Metal Gear. Are you excited by the multiplayer? You can reach us at IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com.
It's always difficult to remember, isn't it?
It is, yes. Anyway, let's move on to this week's feedback. I've got the first piece from Kyle Barrett, who says, with all these remastered games coming out recently for PS4 and Xbox One, there has been a criticism about the lack of new games for the consoles. What games would you like to see remastered for the new consoles, and why? I'd love to see Dead Space, Assassin's Creed 2, and the Uncharted trilogy. Well, let's answer that bit first, and then we'll come back to the last bit. Remasters that haven't yet been announced. There's been quite a few.
You know what mine will be? It'll be Bioshock. Because I was disappointed when the announcement came and it was Bioshock's coming to iOS. I was like, I would have.
Would you actually play that through again?
I think I would play the original because it's been a long, long, long time since I played the original. I never played Minerva's Den either.
Right.
So if you got a package that was dead cheap, like 15 quid, and it had all of the content, you know what? I probably would because that I miss Minerva's Den. Yeah. I never played BioShock 2.
Yeah.
And I missed out on Burial at Sea as well. I kind of moved on to this stuff. So if a package came out with all that stuff in, for like tuned to next generation consoles, I'd do that. Also, and this is kind of nicking the idea from the Master Chief Collection, which I've been reading more about, which I've never really fully appreciated what that Halo Master Chief Collection really is.
There's a lot in there.
It's all four games.
Yeah.
No, it's more than that because it's three and it's Reach. It's like five games.
Yeah.
It's all the multiplayer maps, all the games.
111 multiplayer maps, I believe.
Yeah, and you can go, you can from the master menu, you can go to any of it instantly.
Yeah.
It's just everything.
But if you're into Halo, it is absolutely everything you could possibly want.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate collection.
Yeah.
So something like that, but for Call of Duty.
Yeah, it's a good chat.
Like, I think they should, like Activision, if they're not thinking of doing that, they're missing out on an absolute trick.
Yeah, it's a good chat. Like, I think, like some of the like Call of Duty 2 was obviously out for. I think it was around the launch of Xbox 360, but that was a really good game.
Yeah.
I must admit, I haven't played it recently.
Yeah. I think like that World War II setting is nice. In reality, what they probably would do, they'd probably do a Modern Warfare collection.
Yeah,
maybe a Modern Warfare Black Ops box set.
Yeah,
and it's all those maps in one.
I quite like the idea of some older World War II stuff.
Imagine if all of it.
Yeah.
What about you, Al?
Red Dead Redemption, because that was a game that I didn't really play because it was around the time of my daughter being born, so that would give me the perfect excuse to get kind of back into it. So
awesome. That's a really good question.
Yeah. Well done.
Open it up to the.
Yeah. He also says, after Luke messed up highlighting my email last week, I believe he should suffer a punishment or a forfeit for continuing his crimes against listener feedback. There have been discussions of a forfeit for a while, but I think it will seem fitting to be part of the upcoming 250th podcast.
It does feel like a festive thing to do.
Maybe we should just do the whole podcast of just different forfeits for Luke.
Tar and feather him.
Yes.
That's an oldie. You don't see that much anymore, Chris.
You don't see enough.
It's difficult to get tar. I think that's maybe why.
Not enough TNF.
It's not that easy to get feathers either.
Oh, I know, man.
To you.
So that's fine.
Rip into a cushion.
You look into the tar.
Yeah. And dig up a rug.
Rip into a cushion. Oh, it's sponge. Next one is from Ben Harris. Not really a question in here, but I thought it was an interesting point anyway. He says he feels slightly disappointed by getting his PS4 at launch date. He's disappointed by the current range of titles. This is mainly because I got the system to get cutting-edge graphics and unprecedented mechanics, but it seems to me that the vast majority are indie releases, which I could enjoy on my PS3. They're not why I got my PS4. Now, I put this in because I wanted to ask you, Alex, do you think Ben is justified in feeling like that?
Yes.
You do.
I don't think it's exclusive to PS4 though.
Yeah.
Look, it's the same problem that you have with
at the beginning of any console.
Yeah, exactly. It takes time for developers to get a grip of what they want to get out of it. And you know, we always knew that these were going to be a step up from the old consoles, but not revolutionary. It's not going to be a game changer. It's going to be slightly better.
Also, the games, like, 3 years' time would be much better than the ones
now. Well, we're seeing it already.
Because this is why some of the games like launch titles are always traditionally a bit weak.
Yeah.
Because you're scrabbling around with consoles that haven't really been tamed.
Yeah.
And you're, like, in uncharted territory and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, for instance, Batman Arkham Knight getting delayed.
Yeah.
But that game will be better for it.
Yeah.
Same with Drive Club. That'll be a better game for the
But also, if you look at, and I know we've said this before, GTA 5 was, for me, the epitome of people squeezing every last bit of juice out of PS3 and Xbox 360. And so when you saw the stuff come out on next gen, the difference was, you know, not that great.
Yeah, because you've got one team absolutely pushing the envelope and somebody very much at the beginning of what the new console could do. So,
but I do think, as you say, 2 years, 3 years' time, you'll see huge leaps forwards. In terms of actually mechanics, you know, the problem is that you diverge off the straight and narrow too much and people don't like change.
You can get too wacky.
Yeah.
As Kinect has shown, people aren't willing to embrace it. I think
that's something
like
I
think Tearaway Unfolded is using some of the DualShock 4's more eccentric features in a way that is interesting. Similarly, we've been playing Alien Isolation this week.
Yeah.
And that has very subtle integration of way that the light bar changes colour when you use the motion detector.
Yeah.
It makes different noises through the controller itself. Yep. I think that's stuff subtle,
yep.
But I think it could be quite powerful.
Yeah, and going back to PT as well, like, you know, that's never, you, I don't think you'd ever pay for that game, demo, whatever you want to call it. But it highlights that some, you know, the way that that was put together, and the, I still don't know how you're supposed to do the final mission. I'm so confused by that, and however people worked out is beyond me. But that kind of level of game design, I guess, you wouldn't have had in previous generations. Like the first few parts of that level where you've got to go and find this and that to move on. Okay, I get it. But then, you know, you've got to time stuff. You've got to listen for different
That becomes intentionally obtuse. Yeah. Like that's the whole point. They feel like it would take months for the people to crack the code, as it were.
Yeah. I'm sure people just did it purely by luck.
Yeah. Because well, that's how I did it.
I wouldn't, I couldn't do it.
I got an email from Kyle Marsden who says, I'm loving the look of Sunset Overdrive that's coming out in a couple of months. And it got me wondering, even with highly realistic graphics in next gen and PC games at the highest settings, do you think there will still be a place in the future generations for indie cartoon style games?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think there'll always be room for a wide range of aesthetic styles because games are built and designed by artists. And if you look at art, not everybody aspires to force, like, paint photorealistically. Not all artists want to make a photorealistic game because the game has a different tone, it has a different story that wouldn't suit that style. Like Mario, I would, that game would be horrifying if it was photorealistic.
Yeah.
I don't want to see an obese Italian-American plumber save a princess. I don't want to see it, Chris.
I would quite like to see that.
Would you?
Just like a really,
I think there's probably a porn version of it that you could find if
but,
you.
No, he's just, not saving her, Chris.
No, I wasn't thinking exactly. Yeah, but more like, you know, trying to do a double jump but being a bit overweight and struggling and clinging on by his fingers,
just having a heart attack.
And then Yoshi in is slow motion T-Rex that just eats him.
I think they made this filmer.
And the same with animation as well. Animation, just because they can do pretty much photorealistic animation in movies now, they haven't chosen to do
it
that.
It takes away the art. Like,
There was was it Tarzan? There's a new release of Tarzan or something that came out recently, or was it the Jungle Book? That was kind of somewhere in between.
Ooh. Yeah, there was a Tarzan that came out recently,
in the last sort of 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, the Uncanny Valley.
Yeah, it was really weird. Like, I saw the trailer before Rio 2, I think it was. God, that's the kind of stuff that I can see in the cinema.
Yeah, no, it's Kellan Lutz playing. Expendable Kellan Lutz played
Tarzan.
You're obsessed
with the Expendables, right.
But I'd never actually saw any but that video
was,
from it.
It wasn't quite, well, it wasn't photorealistic, right. But it wasn't like Disney style kind of traditional animation. It was this weird kind of thing in the middle, and I just thought it looked horrible.
I like over the last month you've become Britain's foremost Expendables expert.
That's because he's pitching to be in the next
Not
one.
Not by choice.
I've got a chance.
You have.
Now they've got the Young Expendables, me and Ronda Rousey.
The Expendables.
She's the chick.
Oh, she's a she.
Yeah.
He's a she.
She can beat you up.
That's plot point. Most women could beat
Do they have any brains or is it just brawn?
Who, the Expendables? Yeah, one of them was like an electronics whiz.
Right.
You've got to have
what
an electronics
are you
whiz. I can barely get my computer on.
I don't think you're going to punch people in the face.
I would be the comic relief.
I think you'd be... I think
like
you'd
Rick Moranis or something.
Yeah.
I think you'd be the fast-talking wise guy.
Yeah.
You'd be like, if they need to sneak into a base, you could like distract the guards by speaking to them very quickly. Or
the
directions.
Ernie Hudson. The fourth Ghostbuster.
Winston.
Oh, right.
No, you're more like Janice.
Slimy.
Oh, yeah, you are, yeah.
I'm not like Janice. I'm like Janice. Move
it's
on.
Not Janine. It's Janine.
Is it?
And Janine. I'm not like, either of them.
Shamed myself.
I've got an email from a man whose name I have no idea how to pronounce.
Oh no.
Mate.
Don't say it like that.
Well, you say it then.
No, I don't have to. It's not my
I see he doesn't want his real name read out.
Huthamate, I think that's it. says, I feel like over the past few years there have been a lack of World War and World War II games and movies. Any recent noteworthy releases based on the aforementioned genre? P.S. I played Sniper Elite version 3.
Mm.
Well.
I suppose it's because they did it to death just before then.
But I reckon it's time for a renaissance. I'm sick of modern warfare.
You're like, bring back the war.
I loved Band of Brothers. No, not Band of Brothers. What was the Ubisoft game? Well, I love Band of Brothers because that was good. Brothers in Arms. And I'm not talking about the Dire Straits album. But that was a good album. But Brunson Arms from Ubisoft and the Gearbox, the mechanics were pretty shonky and the graphics weren't that good.
So bring that back.
But it was good. I played. Oh man, I got about three quarters of the way through and it crashed, lost my save, and had to start again. But I did it because I enjoyed it so much. And then they were going to reinvent it. I think it was at E3 2 years ago or something. They showed off what it was going to be like. And as far as I'm aware, that's been canned. It was like, it was overly kind of caricaturized, and I didn't want that. But I'd be well up for another serious World War II game.
I was going to say
Brothers in Arms.
Possible stopgap. Recently, we did stuff on Valiant Hearts. It's not a shooter, but I don't know if he just wants something in that setting. I think it's an interesting.
He didn't say specifically shooters. He just says it's an
interesting
game.
So. You know, it seems it's got a cartoon style. It's a puzzle platformer, but it's got a lot of interesting content about the First World War. So maybe
I'm definitely going to go back and watch Band of Brothers. Actually,
I've never seen it.
Have you never seen it?
Wow.
It's fantastic. I've got the Blu-ray somewhere. I'll lend them.
And it's crazy how many great actors are in it as well.
Yeah.
Some of whom weren't famous at the time.
Tom Hardy in it.
Yeah.
They're all in it, basically, yeah.
They're all in it.
What about you, Chris?
Well, if you're in London next month, London Film Festival, opening film is a World War II film and closing film is World War II film. So there's a couple of big ones coming out. The Imitation Game, which is about, oh man, I knew what his name was and I've forgotten it now. But the guy who cracked the Enigma.
Alan Turing.
Machine. With Benedict Cumberbatch playing him.
Right.
And the trailer looks great. Looks like kind of an award season movie. And Fury, Brad Pitt in a tank, that they've been shooting in the UK last year. That's going to be, I think, closing the festival.
Who's directing that?
I think, top of my head, I think it's David Ayer, the guy that did Training Day and Harsh Times. And he always does sort of almost real-time movies. And I think this is a similar kind of thing where it's all over the... take place in one day.
My only concern with that is, like, when was the last time Brad Pitt did a good film?
He doesn't. World War Z was okay.
Oh, this is grimacing for everyone listening. Sure,
Brad Pitt makes good choices, I think.
12 Years a Slave.
He
carries that film. Absolutely.
Teaches us all about slavery. He pops up to teach us all a lesson.
As God. As the wise white man.
So, yeah, a couple of big. There'll always be war movies, I think.
Yeah. There'll always be war.
Monuments Men was out at Christmas, didn't do so well, but that was another World War II one.
There hasn't been a great war movie for a long time, I don't think.
No.
But also, because, you know, HBO did Band of Brothers, they did...
The Pacific.
What was the modern day one they did? It came out in between those two, and it was set in, I think, Afghanistan or Iraq or Iran.
Wow. Oh.
I don't know.
But it wasn't anywhere near.
Well, Zero Dark Thirty. Like, would you class that as war? It's a contemporary war film. Like the way the war is mutated.
Yeah.
Mm. Also, I really like that film. I enjoyed the thing with Mark Wahlberg as well.
Oh,
recently.
I didn't watch that. Lone Survivor.
Lone Survivor.
It was good. Yeah.
I heard mixed things about that one. You liked it?
I thought it was.
Yeah, I did. I just found it terrifying that it was a true story. Like, I found it absolutely harrowing that they went through that.
Yeah, I thought it was. Yeah.
I'll have to see that one then.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a few.
Yeah. This is Sam. He says, Duck Hunt.
Duck Hunt.
There you go. I am a Kiwi moving from New Zealand to live in London at the start of September. Mm-hmm. My 27th birthday is on the 16th of September, and I'd like to celebrate it appropriately in London. Can you please recommend me something that I can do on my birthday or celebrate moving to London? Is this something we need to go back to next week? But I wanted to put that out there. But I feel like this is our city. We should have some good suggestions.
But it's the same thing that I always say to people. When you live in the city, you don't actually do anything that the city is famous for. Like, I'm sure people who've come over from the US office have seen more of London than I have.
Well, it's good sometimes when people send similar emails. They give us an idea of what they like, what they're interested in, and then we can kind of make...
But in terms of tourist things, like, the only thing that I've really done in London is the London Eye. Like,
The Tower of London's brilliant.
Right.
Do the Tower of London. That's the best thing.
Buckingham Palace. Anybody done?
I've never done it. You do the Tower of London.
Should we put our thinking caps on and come back?
We should also open up to our listeners.
Yeah, like if you ever had an amazing birthday in London, what have you done? And what would you recommend it?
Go up the Shard.
Yeah, not done it.
There's a silent disco up there.
Really?
Ty might put on a silent disco up the Shard.
Go to the Camden Brewery. Not been yet. On Friday. I'll get back
to
you.
But that's the sort of thing that we would do for our birthdays. We just go to a pub and get battered.
Is that you want to do?
He's from New Zealand, though. They're the
Kiwi,
same.
So probably.
They've got even less to do than us, so they're in the pub even more of the time.
But the beer scene in London is really kind of taking off. And there's some really, really good places to drink.
Okay. So, okay, Sam, we'll email you back.
Yeah.
Okay.
But also, listeners, do let us know if you've got any suggestions for Sam. Any more feedback?
I've got a sad email.
Oh.
Yeah.
From Levon in Virginia, USA, who just simply writes, was wondering if the best thing to do is to commemorate pod people by retiring the term or keep it going. So pod people was something I got from Robin Williams when I interviewed him. And actually, when he passed away, I thought, I'll try and find that interview. And I realised I wasn't even at IGN. I was at Time Out, and it doesn't exist anymore. It's not even on the Time Out website. It's lost in the annals of time, him saying pod people. But no, I don't see any reason why to retire it.
I think we should keep it going in honour of an amazing performer.
I think it's fair to say you guys are away, but we're all very sad about that.
Absolutely shocked. I couldn't believe it.
Favourite Robin Williams film or performance? Oh, gosh.
Two stories on this. I really vividly, very vividly remember going to see Jumanji with my parents, and it was a packed auditorium. And I also remember it not only because I loved the film, but midway through the film, there was this kid who needed to go to the toilet, and it was a very noisy scene, and then the volume dropped, and they just heard this kid, must have been like 7 or 8, going, "Mom, I'm going for a poo," and he just ran up the corridor.
But Scarlett does that all the time. It's like you'll be sitting there, like in a restaurant, and she's "I need a poo." It's like, all right.
Scarlett is Alex's wife.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of Hook, even though not everyone else.
Really?
I do really like Hook. I really do. I was the right age for it, but Mrs. Doubtfire. Who else could have done that? No one. Yeah. I really don't think anyone else could have played that role. What about you, Chris?
I like Good Will Hunting.
Good film.
It's the one film that whenever it's on TV, we've always got a film like that, that if you catch a bit of it, you have to keep watching it to the end. Yeah, and that's always been my one. Apart from the other night, they replayed it and it was on. And it made me quite sad.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm not ready to watch it again yet.
Yeah. I think it would have been easier to watch one of these comedic movies.
It's to celebrate his life.
We're watching a dramatic movie. There's something about it that makes it more...
Yeah, I watched Mrs. Doubtfire the other night.
Yeah. See, I was going to watch it, but it was on a Sky channel that I don't subscribe to. So.
Tough. You should have come over mine.
Yeah, Charlotte and I went, let's watch that.
Have either of you seen the absolutely heartbreaking YouTube tribute that someone's put together using his graduation speech from Jack? Have you seen the Jack film?
Yeah.
And it's where he rapidly ages. So by the time he gets to graduation age, he's already an old man.
Right.
So he gives the kind of graduation speech, the valedictorian speech, and it talks about embracing life and living it to its fullest. And it plays over footage of him as Peter Pan and all of his most famous roles. And it's just... I don't think I can watch that. It's good. It's nice. It's really good, though. It's really well judged and well made.
Yeah.
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 Bit of a sad note, but...
That's a way to finish reading feedback.
We've lost a legend.
We have.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the games and movies that are out this week. First up, games.
Yeah, so two. One we'll go over quickly because I think we've talked about it a lot on the podcast before, but it's Plants vs. Zombies, Warfare, which is coming to PS4, I believe.
Yeah.
And then the other one is Tales of Zillia, Alex. You're a big Tales of Zillia fan, aren't you?
No. So thank you for dropping me on the spot there.
I think people who are really into the Tales series probably know more about this game than I do because I've never played a Tales game.
Me neither.
But Colin, who is a huge fan of the series, reviewed it on the site. He gave it an 8.0 saying it's absolutely great. And it's a love letter to fans of the original, mixing up all characters and systems with some very new, fresh ideas. So
I would say, chance are, you've probably already pre-ordered it. And that's a good choice because it's a good game.
This week, Into the Storm's out, which is like the new Twister.
We've needed a new Twister. It's taken lots of years for it to...
Twister was a big deal when it came out, though.
Yeah.
But then you watch it and realise it had no plot.
Have you seen it recently?
No.
I've seen it probably a couple of times in the last 3 or 4 years.
Really?
Because, again, it's one of those films that you just switch your brain off.
Like,
But it's...
I'm just waiting for the flying cow and then move on.
Yeah.
So see that if you like that kind of thing. Lucy, we haven't got that down here, but Lucy's out this week. I blooming well missed it last week because I wasn't very well, but looks like fun.
I didn't realise that was out this week. Oh, cool.
I think so, yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah. Have you seen it?
No.
Looks like fun.
Yep.
Gave it a good review. And Sin City 2, which...
I've heard mixed things.
Yeah, screen. I've not heard anyone say they didn't like it. But is it too late?
It's definitely too late.
I'm just disinterested.
I thought Star Trek Into Darkness was late, being 3 years after the original.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... Who's still pining for that?
It's like 7 years or...
Right, yeah. It's been... It was at the start of all... It was before the Marvel movies got
2005.
Yeah, wow. 10 years. 9 years. So it screened on Tuesday, and I actually just didn't bother going. I thought, I'm going to watch this. I wasn't reviewing it. We weren't doing interviews for it anymore. Yeah. I thought, I'll wait for this one to come on the telly.
Again,
I liked it.
I haven't seen that much like pushing it, really. Mm-hmm. It's almost like it's coming. Oh, here it is.
Well, this releasing a film like that at this time of the year is kind of burying it a little bit, really.
Right.
But I guess they're hoping August Bank Holiday, there'll be people going to the cinema. They'll get an extra day.
Have either of you been to Universal Studios and gone on the Twister ride?
No.
Again, it's not a spoil for one thing, so it's got a flying cow.
I went there before. That's all I want. Twister came out.
Even me too. Yeah. We're pre-Twister.
Yeah, no, I've been twice, one pre-Twister, one post-Twister. It's annoying because the Twister ride replaced the Ghostbusters ride.
Do you know what's really annoying? I went the year before the Jurassic Park ride opened.
That is galling.
That's really annoying.
But not just that, then, the entire expansion, the Islands of Adventure.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, because that's the whole roller coaster.
Let's go back. Let's do an office trip.
I'd love to go back.
If Universal are listening, they might do. If they want to take us to like check out their Halloween
holiday. Yeah, we could do a podcast from a ride.
We could do the podcast on a Hulk roller coaster.
Absolutely.
Like Jimmy Savile Boy Scouts.
Oh, no, you're not allowed to talk about them anymore. That wasn't a milk. That wasn't a milkshake. What I will say is, rather than going to see those films, Fright Fest is on this weekend.
Yes.
So this will be going live on Friday, which is it starts Thursday night. So you will have missed The Guest, and you will have missed Zombievers by this time.
Thank God.
But I am going to see Zombievers at midnight tonight. That's something to look forward to.
Are you honestly looking forward to it?
Yes and no.
It's a bit off his face by that time.
There's something to be said for like fun midnight movies.
So it starts at midnight.
After a few beers. You'll
finish at 2.
Yeah.
You'll get home at 3.
No, he's going for Chinese.
That sounds horrendous.
I know. That's my job. Welcome to my world.
Well, you don't have to go.
I bet
I'm
going to
review it.
The site is not going to fall down if we haven't got a review of Zombievers on it.
I want a review of Zombievers up. People, do you want a review of Zombievers up? Let us know.
It's too late. You're going to be there by now.
But lots of films happening over the course of the weekend. Green Inferno, Eli Roth's cannibal movie. Dead Snow 2. That's zombie Nazis.
Yep.
Housebound's supposed to be great. Kiwi horror comedy. A bit like old Peter Jackson movies.
Mm-hmm.
The Babadook. Apparently that's the scariest film
I've
playing
there. Yeah.
Scary, scary, scary. Terrible title.
Can you still get tickets to any of this?
Yeah, there's still single day tickets.
I might go see Babadook.
I think Babadook might be sold out.
Oh, no.
But I'm going to find that tonight because I think really that's going to be the hot ticket.
But I want to go up and go, can I have a ticket to see Babadook?
Also, the fact that, you know, that you're saying that Babadook is the hot ticket, it's like, what? Which kind of world are we in?
If we meet in the pub to discuss films, the film that's very hard to pronounce after a few bits, Babadook.
I'm going to try and find it. Oh, I can't do it now because I'm going to find a picture of the Babadook for you.
What is a Babadook?
It's a little scary little man.
Is it?
It's Australian.
Is he like a baby duke? But from New Zealand?
I think you're
a Babadook.
I think, Alex, are you imagining a tiny pimp?
Yes, I'm
a little Babadook.
Sorry, the Babadook.
You have to post a picture of Babadook.
That does look really quite terrifying. Oh my gosh!
Is he always riding the hobby horse?
That is a way repulsion meets the Gruffalo.
That is your elevator pitch.
Oh my god!
If you watch the trailer though, you'll be scared. And there's a lot of comedy playing this year at Fright Fest, but that one doesn't look like it's got any comedy in it. It's just very serious.
It sounds horrendous. It sounds horrendous.
It's about grief and depression and
when a mysterious pop-up children's book character appears on the shelf. Oh my god, that sounds horrendous. I really don't want to see that.
Wow, so that film's got a lot of press hit. So I will be there. If you come and say hello if you're coming down. I've lost my page now. I can't talk about any others that are playing. But
this is the only film you need is the Babadook.
Yeah, Open Windows I'll be at. VHS Viral, The Signal.
How many VHS films have they done now?
That's the second VHS. Or the third?
It's the third.
Or maybe I'm getting confused with Wreck as well.
I've reviewed them. And the one I'm most interested in is called The Lost Soul, Doom Journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau. Do you remember The Island of Dr. Moreau?
Yeah, never seen it, but apparently awful.
Turkey.
The Val Kilmer one?
Yeah. So Richard Stanley was the director, who's a British guy who did Hardware and Dust Devil, and that was his big break. It was Val Kilmer, Marlon Brando, David Thewlis. And he got sacked a week into the shoot, and they replaced him with John Frankenheimer. But Richard Stanley's a bit of an eccentric. He then went back onto the island they were shooting on undercover, got one of the costumes, dressed up as one of the animals, and hung around set and tried to mess things up and spy.
Really?
All, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And so this is the first time they're kind of telling the story of what went on behind the scenes on this.
I really enjoy these documentaries. There's a wave of them coming out that are kind of pouring over and doing postmortems on failed projects, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these people now have no agendas. They can just be brutally honest about what went wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still haven't seen the June documentary yet.
Probably the best thing I've seen this year.
There you go.
Jodorowsky's doing. So yeah, that's it for the films.
You've not seen The Babadook.
well, that's it. You've definitely got to update us on The Babadook.
All right, next week.
Next week's podcast.
A full report.
All right, sounds good.
Babadook roundup.
Yes. Also, can you come dressed as a Babadook as well?
Yeah, come in the lobby or something.
Just look at the camera.
If you get me off, I could do it for the whole podcast.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
Okay.
That's it for this week's podcast. Thank you, as always, for listening. You can get in touch, IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. Until next week, we will see you later. Bye-bye.
Cheerio.
Bye-bye.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.